Hello everyone, welcome to the fourth episode of TFS Spotlight, where we discuss anything and everything film-related. Again, Hash Aguirre was unable to join me today, so I'm joined today, again, by Jordan Raup and Dan Mecker, the creators of filmstage.com.
How you doing?
Hello.
Today's discussion is, we're going to do a recap of 2009, our best, our favorites, what we think got overlooked, and so on. So, first let me ask you guys, what do you think 2009 is going to be remembered for?
Well, first of all, I mean, we talked about this last spotlight. This is the first, starting with My Bloody Valentine, you know, I came out, and then all the way up to Avatar at the end. This is when 3D kind of started testing the waters really heavily. So I think that is a huge thing. I think in terms of all of cinema, I think Blu-ray is another, HD, digital production in theaters. I think all those three things are kind of paving the way. But yeah, what do you guys think?
I think that, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that this will be kind of a year that's remembered for being the beginning of, you know, 3D, the new wave of 3D animation, or implementation rather. And then, you know, computer generated effects, kind of the next step, all that stuff. And it's kind of funny. Other than that, it's kind of been an underwhelming year, which I guess we'll get to. So I guess really, in terms of how 2009 will be remembered, probably just ending up the decade and new technology, really.
I would definitely agree with that. It's just a year of technological advancement.
I think the gap between, you know, this the middle of the road, like adult, you know, $40 billion, $50 movies are kind of getting noticed that they're not really making profits anymore. Like we saw Duplicity and State of Play, and you know, then there's these big budget, massive, you know, Transformers, you know, topping and Harry Potter and stuff like that. And then there's these really like minuscule budget movies, you know, like 500 Days of Summer was like 7 million and then Hello Sundance. But, you know, I think that the gap is widening.
The same token, though, I would agree to an extent when you look at a movie like Duplicity, State of Play. But then you also have a movie like It's Complicated, which is in that vein, which, right now it looks like it's doing pretty well, 23 million first weekend, it looks like. And then other movies like Julie and Julia. I mean, granted, I'm talking about Meryl Streep movies and she has some power, but yeah. I mean, you know, you can still carry a middle of the road movie. You know, Law Abiding Citizen, as mediocre as that movie was, that cost 50 million. Knowing cost 50 million and they were both successes. So, there's still room.
I think 09 also shows us what can be accomplished with little funding. District 9, $30 million in the CG it was able to utilize. Not so much this one, but, you know, Crank 2, they shot that on consumer grade cameras and it grossed a fair amount of money.
Paranormal Activity was kind of...
Paranormal Activity is the quintessential example. I mean, you know, it just showed what can be accomplished when your resources are, in fact, limited.
Speaking of Paranormal Activity, I think also, you know, cinemas and studios are trying to get in, they're doing well getting into the social media market, and there's a whole, you know, that's where the internet's headed, that's where, you know, everything's headed. And I think with Paranormal Activity and Twitter, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that, I think that they're just learning how to market movies a little better, and at least you can see the ones that they have been marketing heavily, like what Bruno, that got terrible Twitter buzz, everyone like online really didn't like it, and compared to Borat, that like absolutely tanked, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of shows.
And also, speaking to that, too, and one more thing that 2009 in the future might be remembered for is kind of the beginning of the mumblecore movement. You know, it's been around for a few years now, but this being really the first year that it had any real presence in cinemas.
What exactly, you know, is the mumblecore movement?
Well, it's essentially these, I mean, kind of in the vein of Paranormal Activity in terms of budget, it's just filmmakers, you know, artists, whatever, who get together and they have an idea for a script, maybe a little bit of a script treatment, but they pretty much put the camera, you know, where they see fit and kind of improv, really. So I guess the most successful example is Hump Day, which got a theatrical release and made, I think, somewhere around $400,000, and it cost, what was it, $7,000 to make originally, and then they got it, Magnolia picked it up. And obviously, they definitely put a lot more money into it. But The point is, I mean, that's a mumblecore movie. That's a movie where you have actors who are just kind of in the moment. And, you know, it has a lot of critics. It has a lot of, it has more, probably more critics than supporters, but kind of like, you know, a Paranormal Activity, this is something new, something, you know, very much kind of in the vein of a, you know, the French New Wave, where you had these directors with no money kind of running around with a camera and just, you know, shooting from the hip. This could be the beginning of something like that. So, you know, the American, you know, something like that. And if that, and if, hey, and if it jumps up and becomes something incredible, this might be the year that people remember as the beginning. So
yeah, totally. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but we have to discuss it. What do you guys think is the worst of 2009? And Jordan, I'll start with you just so you can get out of the way.
All right. Well, Meryl's favorite movie. No, I'm just kidding. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. It came out. I saw this at press screening. And so I didn't really know. I didn't go in knowing it was going to be terrible, you know? Like, there wasn't that many reviews out. And I sat through it. And at the end, I turned to my friend. And, like, my eyes were wide open. And I was just shocked at how insulting and terrible and, and just kind of embarrassing the movie was. And I, this is coming from someone from that liked Michael Bay's, you know, first Transformers film. And it just came off like a messy, thrown together, you know, I don't know. Dandy, is this your worst or no?
Yeah, no, this is definitely my worst too. But I was just going to kind of let you do your thing and pretty much agree with you and say that almost on par with it, but I guess not quite, would be Law-Abiding Citizen and Paul Blart Mall Cop. So, I mean, those would be my three gems or anti-gems of the year. I just wanted to get them in there just to make sure we didn't forget lambasting those too.
Well, Meryl, I know you don't agree on Transformers, right?
I don't agree to a point. I agree that it's a movie that was so flawed on so many levels, but I don't think that, you know, you can put all the blame on Michael Bay. I think it was a whole mess of bad decisions put together. But at the end of the day, the story was horrible, but it still pulled off visually what it wanted to do. I mean, visually it works to an extent. So I don't hate it, but it's definitely not my favorite Michael Bay movie.
Yeah. It's kind of an odd occurrence considering, you know, Robert Dorsey and Alex Kurtzman, they're old Star Trek, and I've rewatched that movie many times, and that is just a fun, and I know everyone like rags on the script, but like there are fun moments in that script.
Like, also, you like Transformers 1 though. I mean, you
also don't forget they also wrote Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah, they did. And they also wrote The Island. I mean, these two live with J.J. Abrams and Michael Bay. That's it. And you can really tell where their talent lies on one end of the spectrum, where it doesn't on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. And, you know, the summer kicked off. We saw, you know, Terminator and X-Men, and both of those, you know, were pretty disappointing. But then, you know, after seeing Transformers, I actually revisited, Terminator. And it's not like, you know, there's actual, you know, there's some thought that went into it. And it kind of retroactively, I thought, made those.
Highly recommend everyone listening to this to give the director's cut a chance to turn Terminator Salvation. It's not that bad compared to the theatrical cut.
Yeah, I'd like to watch it. How do they do with the, not to get off topic, but the nude scene? Is that in there?
You know what? It's actually not that much of a nude scene. It's just really shot. It's shot because from the side. It's in the dark. It's not much.
In the film, it literally, like, you can tell exactly where they just snipped it right out. Like if they go to start kiss and then it changes, like, to...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But... for me, my worst is it's a tie between Wolverine, and I say Wolverine because after X3, I didn't think the bar could be lowered, and then not only do they fuck that up, they also end up fucking up the continuity that was established in the second one.
Yeah.
And so that really pissed me off, and then the one, and you know, I get, a lot of people disagree with me on this, 2012. I absolutely despise 2012, and my reaction to 2012 was similar to Jordan's reaction on Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. I felt actually a little insulted when I watched it, and like, it was overbloated, it was really long, and unlike Transformers, it didn't even look that good. I mean, I couldn't tell where the $200 million went.
Well, yeah, no, I can see how someone would hate 2012, but to say it's worse than Transformers, I don't see that, but I don't know. 2012 just kind of felt harmless, and you kind of knew, like, you know, there was only a few, very few, for the, I think it's about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, there's only a few moments where it was kind of cringe,
Well, that's funny. It's like, yeah, I knew it was be bad, but I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting, like, and by the way, since then, I have watched 10,000 BC, and I feel it's worse than 10,000 BC.
Oh, okay. Well, I only made it through about half of that movie, so I might have to rewatch, but it was pretty terrible. But yeah.
So let's not dwell anymore on the things that hurt us this year. But before we move on, I want to ask quickly, like, why was 2009 filled with so many bad films? And I think one of the things you have to put the focus on is your standard studio film takes about 2 years from pre-production to release to make. And 2 years ago was the writer's strike. And I think that this year is the fallout of the writer's strike in terms of the film, because on TV it came very quickly and swiftly.
I think those movies that would take 2 years, the 2 year pre-production, like the big blockbuster and stuff, you could see that. But I think there was actually a handful of really, really great smaller budget movies that might have been written after that, or a little bit after that. And actually we saw a good amount of I think really great smaller budget.
I was thinking about that, and I think that the smaller budget is there because of the writer's strike. A lot of studios were looking for things to put into production, because they didn't know how long this was going to last. So they went to films like District 9 and films like 500 Days of Summer to put those out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think I think it shows in both ways. In both the ways you guys are talking about. You know, you have a movie like District 9, which is like essentially the remnants of the Halo movie. And it worked, it worked. It was definitely almost like a recession-proof, writer strike-proof project by Sony, and it definitely paid off. And, I think you could say the same for definitely 500 Days of Summer and movies like that, sure.
What do you guys think was the most overlooked of 2009? Because there were a lot.
Yeah, I think, Dan, you want to go first, I think.
Well, the two that I'll point out, I'll go big film, small film, just for the two overlooked. And for small film, I'll say Sugar. It was probably one of the most overlooked films, just because it was HBO Films' last film. It didn't really get much of a release. There were there was no Ryan Gosling in this one, by the same people who made Half Nelson. It was a great performance by the lead actor, but it wasn't anchored by a performance, much like a movie like Crazy Heart, or like The Wrestler, where you can kind of, the movie itself is lesser in terms of critical reception than the performance that anchors it. So this movie was very much its own beast. And I feel like, it in a way it makes sense it didn't get more recognition, but I just hope that over time people realize how great it truly is. And in terms of big movie, Public Enemies, I think.
Yes.
Really got, look, I don't think it's Michael Mann's best movie, but that being said, I can't wait to watch it again and, maybe find out that I'm wrong and that it is his best movie, just because I did see it about 1.5 times. I snuck into a theater with Jordan, I remember that, and we watched a little bit. So I did really love this movie, and even though there are other movies that certainly were better this year, I really should definitely watch it again and kind of see what was in there, because there was definitely a whole lot of greatness in there that I think people just overlooked. So,
Jordan?
I have three small ones. Well, two small ones, one slightly big. All right, first, Black Dynamite is a like a return to blaxploitation, and it is just pure, like you will not, it's probably one of the funniest films I've seen all year, and it just captures the style of the movies that were before it. And I think it got extremely small limited release, but now in the next couple of months they're actually touring it around these midnight showings in different cities. So if it's in your city, definitely check it out. And I think it's coming to Blu-ray and DVD early spring, so I would definitely check that out. That was just one small one I had. And then Sin Nombre was another movie. It was a directorial debut from Cary Fukunaga, and he's a NYU film grad, and he made a short film based on it, and then he was given money to make this, and it tells the story of these this kind of journey from Mexico up into America, and films before like El Norte, this is kind of like a brings a lot of style. There's a couple, you know, long shots that really are amazing. There's one right in the very beginning of the film where they travel through this favela and look at this gang member's hideout, and it's all one shot, and you kind of see what this world they're living in and how, why they want to get out. And then just, I won't spoil anymore, talk about anymore, but just the whole journey is just amazing. And it's actually on Netflix, watch instantly in HD, so no excuses, definitely check that out. And then lastly is Rian Johnson's Brothers Bloom. And this movie was supposed to get a release last November. It was at Toronto Film Festival last year, over a year and a half ago now. And yeah, this movie is just bursting with energy and original style. I mean, there's a lot of shout outs to other films in it, but I think Rian Johnson definitely is not a Wes Anderson copycat like many people see, but I think he brings the original style and great performances by Mark Ruffalo, Adrian Brody, Rachel Weisz, and it's just fun, it's interesting, it's dramatic. The end, and people complain about the end, and I love the end. I don't know, Dan, I know you like this film a lot, so what do you think about
it? Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think that the ending was great. Yeah, I think it's funny that people kind of hated on it a little bit, at least. Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of shout outs to a bunch of different movies, but it's very much in the vein of a lot of, you know, if you watch Martin Scorsese's early movies, he had a lot of shout outs himself to older movies, you know, and people were saying the same thing in terms of his originality, but also based on, you know, coming from another source, you know, kind of like a, you know, a cinephile, you know, like that generation of directors who just watched a whole lot of movies and then took what they knew and then, you know, made it something different. And I think Rian Johnson is going to be one of those people where every movie he makes will be kind of an updated creative take on something maybe we've seen before, but never his way. And so The Brothers Bloom definitely worked for me. I liked it considerably more than Brick, actually, which was his original movie, which I know that was received a lot better, I guess, received more people talked about it. But this movie will definitely stand the test of time, I think, for sure.
Yeah, it comes out in Blu-ray and DVD in January.
So. Oh, it's getting Blu-ray released? That was just DVD.
Well, it was weird. They released it. It was rent only since like November, and then like now they're releasing it. I don't know.
You can buy Johnson. From Canada though. So
yeah, you can buy from Canada, but I think it comes out the first week of January. So
there's a couple films that I think got overlooked, both in terms of the way it was released and then overlooked by people. The first one, well, in terms of release, is Fanboys. Fanboys, I watched it, and I felt that it was a very cute little comedy. It was very, very well done. Kyle Newman knew very much what he was doing. And if you know anyone who's a Star Wars freak, or you are a Star Wars freak, in my case, I just know someone who's a Star Wars freak, you know, this movie is for that person. This movie's for anyone who can really appreciate what they're trying to go for. And it's just like cameo after cameo in this movie too. It's insane. Like Seth Rogen pops in, Kevin Smith pops in. It's just untold amounts of cameos. Another one is you guys saw this, and I don't know if you experienced it on the same, like, you know, you felt the same way about it, but Gamer. It was a movie made in between the Crank films for Neville Dean Taylor. And I think it really shows that they could do stuff besides Crank, and I actually enjoyed it, both on a fun action movie level and a slight social commentary level, similar to the way Paul Verhoeven did it with RoboCop and Starship Troopers. What do you guys think about that?
I enjoyed it certainly more than I guess everybody, but except for you, Meryl. I think that hopefully Gamer is the first step in more thought-provoking movies by them. But Verhoeven, his gift was making movies that took themselves seriously or appeared to take themselves seriously, even though they really didn't. And, you know, so like that's why, you know, you have people who like Total Recall because they actually enjoy the movie as it's told. You know, like a really interesting da 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 about Mars or whatever. The same goes for RoboCop and Starship Troopers. You know, there are people who actually like that movie because of its message. But then, you know, the way that Verhoeven made them to kind of, you know, mock the movie. You know what I mean? So his gift was that double entendre, you know, mm-hmm. in all of his movies. And I don't think that Neville Dean Taylor have that quite yet at all. Their writing is way too on the nose, and they need to get better actors than Gerard Butler. And you know, maybe they should just cast Michael C. Hall.
I gotta say, in regards to Gamer, I don't think a dance sequence has ever been more appropriate in a movie.
Yeah, that was the best part.
There's a ton of little different visual things they did in that movie that I really like. They had a dance sequence with the lights in the background, and the basketball court sequence, and the prison sequence with the sand, and who's Leguizamo? It was definitely visually interesting for the entire movie, but I don't know if I agree so much on the. I thought all the social commentary was a little bit like on the nose, if you will, forced. Yeah.
The one thing I'll say about Neville Dean Taylor is they'll be around for a while because they know how to make movies cheap, and that's very much kind of something that people are going to need to know how to do in the future. So.
Definitely, and also like they shot. Game of Shot was the first Hollywood studio production anyway, to be shot on the new Red system.
Really?
Shay was the first movie to do it, but Game of was the first one with the studio backing, like Lionsgate was backing them.
Cool.
They shot it, and it comes out very nice. But I think Crank 2 proves what they can do with consumer grade technology. Mm-hmm. Now the last one I want to talk about, and Jordan, I know you saw this one. Is The Education of Charlie Banks, which is a movie directed by Fred Durst, who is the frontman for Limp Bizkit. And I think that I think this movie, I really underrated. Jesse Eisenberg is really nice in it. Jason Ritter is really good in it. And I'm surprised Fred Durst can direct the movie. I was shocked
because, like, if you watch and you don't know what Fred Durst, it feels like this, you know, low-budget art house film. There's a lot of slow shots. I mean, there's a lot of long shots. There's a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, you know, if you look at a Limp Bizkit video, you know, I know it didn't, you know,
he directs, no, he directs the videos too.
He does. See, yeah. Like, I feel they're just completely different. I feel like he really actually knew what he was doing. And this was a big surprise. I mean, I don't think it was too overlooked. I don't think it's a movie you need to run out and see, but I think,
no, but I think
if you check it out, it's definitely shows some promise. And I know he has another project coming up that
he's writing with Andrew Walker. Or Kevin Walker? Kevin Walker, my bad.
Andrew Kevin Walker,
who wrote Seven. It's called Psycho Killers, and we'll see how that comes out. But before we completely move away from this topic, one other thing I want to ask you guys is, what do you think were the surprise hits of 2009? The first one I think of was the beginning of the year, Taken, with Liam Neeson.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say that. That was my first.
That's a big one. Cool.
Yeah, that was just that one came out left field. Pierre Morel is coming off District 13 at that point, and I think it's great.
Yeah, we'll see the sequel to that. Edge of Darkness released almost the exact same date. Just kidding. It's funny the way they put Edge of Darkness. It's literally like, I think it's they're a day apart, the release from last year.
Yeah, like, and I think that Mel Gibson and Liam Neeson are like 3 years apart in age.
Dan, what do you think of Taken?
What I think of, Taken's a stupid, awesome movie. You know?
Okay, yeah, I'll support that. Another one, another surprise hit, of course, District 9. I mean, that again, we discussed this a little bit earlier, but District 9, just no one expected it to do what it did.
Yeah, it's actually really fun. If you, I actually just picked up the Blu-ray, but there's a commentary on it that he recorded before at Comic-Con before it became a massive hit, and I heard it's really interesting. Because he doesn't talk about it like it's this huge hit that everyone loves. He talks about it like this is a small independent movie that he'll be surprised if anyone watches. So I think because the commentary was recorded before the release, I think that would definitely be. I can't wait to listen to it and see.
Definitely.
See what he thinks. Yeah. But yeah.
And I think the last one that we have. Daniel.
Oh yeah, I have one. Zombieland. I don't think anyone expected.
Oh yeah. Me, Jordan, and Dan saw this at a press screening, and I mean, it was amazing. Like, I was looking around, and our reactions were all synced up. It was just that, like, I've never seen a stronger reaction from an audience. And, so, on point. You know, occasionally you'll get half the audience left at one section, half the audience left in that section. Everyone was on key with everything happening in that film.
Yeah. And
I think it's a true sign of things to come for those guys. Last one, of course, is Paranormal Activity. And that movie has grossed over what I think it's over 100 million at this point.
Yeah, I think it's like about 108.
Right, and it's
it is 107.
I think that like this is, I think that with Paranormal Activity, I think this is a completely wrong iteration in terms of genre, but it's the next Clerks type film, where it's coming out of left field from a director who had no money whatsoever, did it all on credit cards, and had got these got actors in who no one has heard of before, and you know, just you know, was free for. In this case, it was the dialogue that was improvised, and Clerks, it was the camera work that was improvised. But
yeah, what's most interesting about that movie is his next movie, Area 51. I wonder if it's going to be, because I know he's given a much larger budget, so I wonder if he can kind of recreate that same magic. I know he's going for the exact same style, the found footage thing, so I wonder if he can do repeat business in terms of that. But Dan, did you like Paranormal Activity?
I did. I liked it. I think that it's... I mean, I think that it had some really great moments. But at the same time, it's kind of funny. I think that it kind of exemplifies a lot of the problems people have with the mumblecore films I was talking about, because even though the actors in the movie are very capable, it's kind of, for me at least, it was kind of trying to watch it sometimes. You know, like the last 25 minutes are very harrowing. You know, they're very good, obviously. You know, that's kind of, I feel like, why you go to that movie. But really, the first hour is, there are parts that are painful, like in terms of performance. And so hopefully with Area 51, the performances can match the ideas and the effects and the directing. And so hopefully that'll be the biggest upswing of a bigger budget. So we'll see.
Also, quick though, for Paranormal Activity is I after I watched the movie in theaters, and that was the Spielberg recommended ending. Right. I went back and went online and got the screener, which has the original ending on it. And I gotta say, the original ending is much better.
No way, dude. Are you serious?
The one where she's just catatonic next to the bed.
Horrible.
Instead of, because I feel that the original, the new ending that was recommended by Spielberg, where she, the demon comes out.
Yeah.
I feel it takes away from some of that aspect. Where was it? Maybe it was her going psychotic. Maybe it wasn't.
No.
No. No,
what are you talking about? Listen, Steven Spielberg knows how to make movies. Okay,
yes, very much.
And the end of that movie is a perfect example of why he makes movies really well and other people don't make them as well as he does, because he knows. He knows what audiences want. And listen, it is very hip and intelligent for people to go back and watch the alternate ending and say that they like that more after enjoying the original. Okay, but the truth is, that is a fucking boring motherfucking ending to the movie, okay? It doesn't, I watched it, it's what, 7 minutes long? She stands there for five. The stupid thing fast forwards for half of it. I would never want to, you know how angry I would have been if at the end of that movie that had happened? I would have been furious. Like, you watch a movie like Paranormal Activity, you watch a movie like Blair Witch Project, so at the end, all your fears are confirmed and you leave being like, oh my god, that was insane. And that is what the Spielberg ending did, for sure, I think, for sure.
Completely agree with that. Can I, you know, let's move on and talk, just one more movie I have, Claudia with a Chance of Meatballs. Looking at the trailer before, and, like, I love the book as a kid, but, like, looking at the trailer, it just looked kind of cheap, I don't know. And then when I saw the action movie, we saw it, like, about a couple weeks late, but after all the great reviews poured in, I was just shocked the kind of edgy humor they had, and 3D worked really well. I just really enjoyed it, and it did really well box office wise. So.
Oh yeah, I would definitely agree on Claudia Chance of Meatballs. I mean, also because I didn't think Sony Animation had the capability to make a good movie, and they did. And it's like there's this other film they made. It was like this baseball anime movie, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is actually like really good. I really enjoyed it. It was fun and. I highly recommend it to anyone who's just looking for a nice little fun movie to kick back and watch.
Yep, definitely.
Now, of course, let's get on to the best of 2009. So, Dan, what do you think is the best of 2009?
Well, the best movie of 2009 is Avatar. I think, still unsure about that answer, but I that's definitely up there. Just for what it did for movies in general. And then A Serious Man for me is just, I have in terms of story and everything, I have not seen a better movie this year. That was definitely one of the best. But then also on my list, right up there, would be An Education. Duplicity would still be up there somewhere. The Brothers Bloom. So movies like that, kind of a mix of a bunch of different things. But I think at top would stand Avatar, I have to say. So.
Jordan?
Yeah, my gut wants to go with Avatar, but I know that A Serious Man might be a better movie, and but I know Dan talked about that already, so I want to bring up a movie that I really love that not a lot of people are picking, and that's Steven Soderbergh's The Informant.
Yes.
I watched this twice in theaters, and second time, I absolutely adore this movie. Every line, the Matt Damon's performance is just, it's so watchable, and it's so much fun, and then the end, it gets a little sad as you realize that all these jokes and all these things you're laughing at is kind of
made out
serious. And I just, the whole style they were going for, the score, everything about this movie came together for me.
And also, just on that note, I would say in terms of overlooked and also one of the best, The Girlfriend Experience, which is also Steven Soderbergh.
Yes, I watched that, and I think it's a brilliantly executed film, but I for me, I found it a little boring at times.
Yeah. I love that movies like that can get made these days. People talk about how indie film is struggling right now, and they're completely right. But if you're someone like Steven Soderbergh, who has some pull, but also deals with a lot of problems with budget, as Che would show. He can still make really, really, really great low-budget movies like that, just as he did 20 years ago with Sex, Lies, and Videotape. So that was great to watch.
Well, I don't think the problem is getting them made. I think the problem is getting them seen.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that the fact... Well, but if you get your movie made, hopefully it'll get seen. The first step is getting it made. That was definitely a triumph. Yeah.
I loved Up in the Air. On the second view, yeah, it does have some problems, but I think we're going to do a podcast review on that along with Sherlock Holmes and stuff. But and then Star Trek is a wide one that everyone loved. And then Adventureland was one that I thought really... Now,
I have nitpicks with it. I think Adventureland is a good movie, but I have nitpicks with it because I grew up 5 minutes from the theme park that Adventureland is based off of, and they did not get into how much of a hellhole that place really is, and that movie stems from the director's personal experience working at the park, and I know people that work at that park, and it's so much worse than the movie makes it out to be. So I think that's just because I know the facts behind the movie is why I don't enjoy it.
I mean, I thought they touched, but I really like the way they handled the relationships in the movie, and that was more why I liked it. And then there's one, and I loved Anvil, the documentary, Anvil, the story of Anvil, and Hurt Locker I loved. And then I don't think this movie is actually considered a 2009 movie, but A Prophet, Un Prophet.
True.
And I think it's actually getting a U.S. release in February, so I don't think it's actually considered a 2009 movie. Anyways, I'll go ahead. Sorry.
You actually brought up the one that I consider my favorite, and it's The Hurt Locker. I think it's my favorite because every decade has the epitome war film. Like the 60s had Lawrence of Arabia, the 70s had Platoon, the 80s had Full Metal Jacket.
No.
Am I that wrong on that?
Yeah, the 70s had Apocalypse Now and Deer Hunter, the 80s had Platoon, and
the 90s had Saving Private Ryan.
The 90s had Saving Private Ryan. Yes.
So I think that the only real modern day war film we had before this was Black Hawk Down. There wasn't really much else to speak of. I think Hurt Locker will be remembered as the war film of the decade. And I just think it's an amazing film, not only of the Iraq War, but just of modern day warfare and how modern day warfare is fought. It's no longer fought in the trenches where you have, hundreds of guys on one side, hundreds of guys on the other side, and just shooting each other. Now it's all fought by remote. Now your enemy isn't going to run out with a gun and try to take you out and put his body at risk. He's going to go sit back behind a building, put a bomb out in the middle of the street, and hope you walk over it. And I just think that I think there's a line in the movie where Jeremy Reiner, I think it's his name, Jeremy Reiner?
Jeremy Reiner?
Yeah. His character says, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die comfortable. And he takes off his bomb gear and goes to work on the bomb in the car. And I think that's such a good way to describe what soldiers think about. Like, they can't plan for the unexpected, to just embrace it. So they'd rather just embrace it and hope that everything works out in the end. What do you guys think?
Well, I would say, to your comment about showing in modern warfare, I to an extent you have a point, but mines have been around for a really long time. So, you know, there's been people whose job it is to, you know, dismantle mines. They've been around for a long time. But I think, you know, in terms of the way the movie's shot, the way the performances are handled, it is very much a modern war movie, which is to say, in Saving Private Ryan, there's a lot of extroverted acting. There's a lot of speeches. There's a lot of, you know, Giovanni Ribisi dying dramatically, you know, Vin Diesel, give my mother this thing, da 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 da, very classic war stuff. Mixed with the opening scene, which is, you know, very much kind of literally charging into a new way of showing war, right, with very realistic shooting. So it's kind of a mix of the two. But then you have movies like Platoon, which literally, you know, it demonizes war while symbolizing characters as, you know, Judas and Jesus, and you know what I mean? So very romanticized. So this movie, I think, is very much the beginning of Saving Private Ryan for the entire thing. It's in your face, a lot of handheld stuff, a lot of introverted acting. Jeremy Renner does a great job. I really hope he gets the Best Actor nomination. I don't think it'll happen, but here's hoping. And just scenes that feel natural and unwritten, which is awesome. But they all were written, which obviously makes it better. Yeah, I don't know about the actual warfare in it. You know, it's not like I said, that mines weren't around, but I think the way that it was done definitely kind of reflects what you're saying. So, yeah.
Jordan?
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing that impressed me most about this movie was just how tense that, not only the action scenes, but just the entire movie, the dialogue back and forth. And
well, that's like, how I find funny.
There's a sniper battle.
Right, that's how I find funny. There's like, you know, there's like three major action scenes in the whole movie. There's the opening scene. There's a sniper battle, and then there's a little shootout near the close to the end. I mean, that's about it. It really is.
Yeah.
It's all pretty much just winding.
Yeah, I think she does a great. Catherine Bigelow does a great job, just like, but making it feel that the entire movie is just this whole, you know, like you're experiencing it, just this tense. Like I said, like just you know, heart pounding, literally. Like I know when Dan and I watched it, we like just breathed, like had a huge breath aside. Right after, it's like, oh, all right, it's over. But right. You know, I think she did a great job in terms of that. And I think you want to segue into Oscars talk about.
Yeah. What are our Oscar predictions? Because you know the big ones that people are naming are Serious Man, Avatar, Hurt Locker, and Up in the Air. Are the ones that everyone's like thinking of.
I don't think of Serious Man. Yeah,
people thinking about Serious Man. I don't think people are thinking about Serious Man. I think maybe Serious Man might grab a writing nomination, maybe Best Picture, because they're 10, but I think for Best Picture, you're looking at Avatar and Education, Up in the Air, Up.
Hurt Locker.
I think Bastards has a chance.
I think Bastards is in. Precious. Yes.
And then there's those ones on the side, like Invictus and Nine, which hasn't.
I think that Nine will get a nomination, as funny as that sounds, kind of like the way that Munich got a nomination, even though no one really saw it, and it didn't get the best reviews at first, because, I don't know, I mean, Nine's just one of those movies that gets a nomination, you know what I mean, just by the Academy, oh. So I think, you know, those movies, and then, trying to think, I mean, with acting, I do think that Sandra Bullock is going to get nominated for The Blind Side, actually, so, I mean... I don't know what you want to say about that, she's great in it. So.
Yeah, I think in terms of there's one actress, Tilda Swinton in Julia. Has anyone seen this movie?
I haven't seen Julia.
Tell you the truth, I've never even heard of it. But I know.
Well, I heard about it when it was at the festivals and stuff. Yeah, but
Yeah, but a number of people, like, we just actually put up a 2009 readers poll, and I got a message from someone saying, like, how could you not even include Tilda Swinton in the running? Because, anyways, I know I have to check out that film. It's on Netflix.
For best actress, I think that one that's going to get overlooked, and Jordan, you even overlooked it in the poll originally, is Zoe Saldana for Avatar. And I think anyone who doesn't know how the movie was shot doesn't know that that's her real performance.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big problem. Like, not enough people are aware that that's her acting. That's not an animator going in with her voice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I really hope, I would love if Carey Mulligan from an Education got it. I know Dan probably would agree with me, right?
Yeah, no, she'll definitely get nominated. I hope she wins. I think she will, I think, personally.
Yeah. I want to see, for me, I mean, Best Picture, I want to see The Hurt Locker. From actor, I think George Clooney is the one in the front runner for that.
I would think Jeff Bridges. Also, Crazy Heart.
Well, I got to see Crazy Heart before I can make that call, but I hear that too. It's like Jeff Bridges does an amazing job.
Well, my theory with the Jeff Bridges thing is this. I think that he is definitely, I mean, he's definitely the front runner. He's definitely the front runner. And I think he'll win. I do. And I think that George Clooney will get a nomination, but I don't really think he has much of a chance to win. I mean, he won his Oscar for Syriana, so. But I think what you might see happen is a case of Mickey Rourke hot at first and then Sean Penn sweeps in at the end kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That might happen because a lot of people love Colin Firth in A Single Man, and he also hasn't won an Oscar. You know what I mean? So you kind of have you have Bridges and Firth. Both are without Oscars. Both very deserving. I mean, just based on body of work, they're deserving. But I guess I've yet to see either of these movies, but I will this upcoming week. And so, you know, once I see that, I'll be curious. But I think, I guess if the vote is split between Colin Firth and Jeff Bridges, then George Clooney will come out with the win, but that happens kind of rarely. So we'll see. But.
Yeah, and I think Morgan Freeman has kind of died down in terms of being,
He'll get the obligatory nomination.
Here's the thing about Invictus. I think Invictus is a horrible movie in terms of story and directing, but the acting in Invictus, I think, is spot on.
Yeah,
I agree.
So I think that they do deserve acting nods. I don't think Clint Eastwood, even though he's going to get it, deserves a director nom. I don't think it deserves a Best Picture nom, even though it's going to get it. Because Clint Eastwood is a director that plays to critics. He hasn't played to audiences. He wants his Oscars.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I think that critics played to Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
Clint Eastwood could make any movie that he ever wanted to. You know, he has no affiliation, no reason to affiliate, no reason to appease people because he's already appeased everybody. People love Clint Eastwood. I love Clint Eastwood. I don't even like him that much, but I respect his work, right? So I don't think it's a case of Clint Eastwood being like, oh, I really need to make a movie so that Oscar's going to, you know, appreciate it and give me an award. I mean, he's won his awards. I think that he makes movies that are old Hollywood. They're classic.
Yep.
They're slow. The pacing's slow. The lighting is dim, and then it's bright. I mean, there's not a lot of diversity in his movies in terms of how they're made, right? I mean, if you look at the editing, it's very standard most of the time. But I think that people love the idea that Clint Eastwood is kind of like this old patriarch of a better time or whatever you want to call it. And so they kind of give his movies a little bit more leeway. You know, they give stupid stories like Gran Torino more leeway. They give, you know, really standard, poorly written stories like Invictus more leeway. And I think so. They definitely play to him. So
I think the real category that's going to get a lot of, like, who's going to win this, it's going to come down to this, is Best Director. Because I can see Kathryn Bigelow, Tarantino, James Cameron, Lee Daniels, all these guys, they're pretty much all on the same level in terms of their directing ability in the movies. So that's the only one I'm really not sure who is going to win that or who I want to win that.
I don't think Lee Daniels is, I think his talk of pressures is actually died down quite a bit. I don't think that's a movie very much based on the performances that and speaking of that, I know you want to talk about that, but I think you want to just lock up. I think actor support in terms of supporting roles. I think Christoph Waltz and for male and Monique Monique for supporting. I do guys all agree on that?
I don't know about Christopher Waltz. Maybe I think it's Christoph Waltz. I think it's definitely a possibility. But in terms of actress, definitely Monique.
Yeah, definitely. I think.
All right, cool. And then
Waltz is a lock, but Monique is 90%. You never know.
Yeah. All right, and then for directing, it'd be great to see Bigelow and Cameron fight it out. That'd just be,
I think that Cameron's gonna win. I mean, I would love to see Bigelow win, whatever, but like, I mean,
would just add so much buzz to Avatar. To be like, he does Titanic, wins the Oscar, goes away for 13 years or more. Twelve years. Goes away for 12 years, comes back, wins another Oscar.
Yeah. I mean, this next month is when, you know, they don't decide until, I think, January is when the ballots have to be mailed in. And I think the next month, it's pretty much going to be all Avatar talk, I think. I mean, just right now, in terms of box office, looking to just beat out Sherlock Holmes. We'll see in the next couple of days. But yeah.
As for Lee Daniels, I don't think he's going to get nominated. If he does, I'm not going to be a fan of that. I mean, Precious is a fine movie, and it's got some really great performances, and it says a whole lot and all that. But I mean, I don't think the directing. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's
what
not,
about what yeah, about Tarantino? Because Tarantino yeah, still I, has, doesn't have a director Oscar.
It's so. Gonna somehow. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's a great writer. I think he'll get nominated for writing. I don't think he'll. Has he ever been nominated for directing? Did he get nominated?
I think he got nominated for Pulp Fiction. Yeah, I think not he, sure. Because usually, if you get best director, now.
Not always. He won for writing, for Pulp Fiction, and I think if he should win for anything, for Inglourious, it should be for writing. I mean, it was a well directed movie for sure, but there are other directors out there. You know, though, I don't know that Jason Reitman.
He was nominated for Pulp Fiction,
the director. Yeah, I saw Up in the Air, and I think, I really, really enjoyed it. I think it was a very strong movie, but Jason Reitman does some things in that movie that really, really bothered me. Like, there's some shots that just don't seem to fit with the movie. I did not enjoy some of the choices that he made. So, I imagine he will get nominated, but I don't know. I'm gonna have to rewatch it because I was just a little turned off some of the choices he made. So we'll see, but.
I think when I look back, everyone I keep enjoying your thoughts. You hear about all this Avatar talk. I think Avatar's a movie that is going to get every single technical Oscar. It's going to get editing, directing, cinematography, CG, art direction, etc. I think it will get a Best Actress for Zoe Saldana, or at least has a chance. It definitely deserves a Best Picture nomination. I don't think it gets the win, but I mean. Avatar, compared to some of the other stuff that came out this year, I don't think it's the strongest film. It's definitely the most revolutionary film, for sure. But I don't think it's the overall picture. And because at the end of the day, you have to incorporate the story into that overall picture. And it's a good story. It's a well-told story. But it's not the most creative story compared to some of the other stuff that came out.
I agree with that, but I think the Academy, as we talked about before, it's an easy, easy picture movie to just to love. And I think there's not, I mean, we talked about, you know, previous movies, you know, we saw, you know, Titanic, Dance with Wolves, there's movies that they've nominated before, and everyone Best Picture, yeah, Braveheart.
Is my question, are there movies that are going to get nominated because they're afraid of pulling another Dark Knight?
Well, I mean, now that there's 10, it's kind of, that, I mean, Up will get nominated, I don't think, there's not really... Star Trek and District 9 both had talks of being nominated. I think those are really, you know, outside chances. But, I mean, personally, I would love to see that happen, but I don't think it will be.
I still think the one that's going to come out left field is Moon. I think Moon has a shot.
No. Duncan Jones even said on Twitter that Sony is not even campaigning for it because they don't want to put the money towards it. So they're not even sending out screeners. So
that makes me sad.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so... Enough Oscar talk. Let's talk 2010. Most anticipated.
Hell yeah.
There's a couple films coming out in 2010 that I know I really want to see. First of all, I know all three of us can agree, Iron Man 2.
Right.
Is coming. And I think I worry about Iron Man 2 because the question is it going to fall into the Dark Knight mentality, an X-Men 2 mentality, and Spider-Man 2 mentality, or is it going to fall into the Transformers 2 mentality, where it's going to be end up being really effects-driven and there's no thought put into the story, or is it going to be another one of those great comic book sequels? I'm not sure.
I mean, I'm one person that thinks Iron Man is just a fine blockbuster. It's not, it wasn't one of my favorites of the year. I just think it's a fine movie, and I think that Iron Man 2 looks no different, especially coming from the trailer, which just seems like more of the same, and that's not a bad thing. You know, I think it'll be fun. There's probably 10 movies I could name that I'm more excited for, but I don't know, Dan, what do you think about Iron Man 2?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that you have to worry about with Iron Man 2 is the Batman and Robin syndrome, you know, where you just put too many bad guys, you know, too many characters just on the floor. You know, Batman and Robin, it was Batman, Robin, Batgirl,
Freeze,
Bane, Poison Ivy, Mr. Freeze, da-da-da-da-da. You know, it was overkill.
And it was like that in Spider-Man 3.
And so in Iron Man, yeah, exactly. And in Iron Man, you have now Iron Man, War Machine, Justin Hammer, Whiplash, whatever, Natasha Romanoff, whatever her name is, Scarlett Johansson. And
Black Widow.
Yeah, Black Widow. And I think one more, maybe? I don't even know. So, like...
Did you say Sam Rockwell?
What's that?
Sam Rockwell, did you?
Well, yeah, Justin Hammer, yeah. So, you have at least three villains, one more hero. So, I think in terms of just plain screen time, it's going to be hard. But we'll see, you know.
My problem is specifically with Whiplash and Mickey Rourke, because I always go back to X-Men when I think about things like this, because Bryan Singer is a guy that knew what would translate well to film from the comic book, and then anything else that wasn't going to translate well was changed. Like, one was the costumes. Wolverine didn't have yellow spandex. He wore the black suit because that plays better to film. Whiplash, I think, is a character that does not play well to film and is going to hurt the movie because of that, because the way just... And, I mean, you see this. You see in the trailer, he doesn't look good. And it's not look good that he's ugly. It just doesn't look like it plays well to film. And
yeah, I don't know. I completely disagree. I can't wait to see Whiplash on screen. I love...
Yeah, me either.
I loved him in the trailer, like the scene where he cuts the race car in half. Like, I can't
see that scene.
Awesome. So, I mean, I guess it'll be, you know, if the public agrees with us or you more, really. I mean, just because I know what you mean.
I think he's
a weird villain, but
I think each of the villains bring a little something different, you know, like Whiplash is kind of dark, and I feel like Sam Rockwell, we haven't seen Sam Rockwell, but I think it'll be more of a fun character, just judging from the comics. And then, and then Scarlett Johansson is kind of, you know, the sexy, you know, watchable. You know, I think
the next film that we all want to see is Inception.
Yes.
Christopher Nolan's follow up to The Dark Knight.
Definitely my most anticipated after the trailer for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Here's my question. You know, did you all see the new trailer?
Hell yeah.
Okay, dang, you suck.
Well, in French, actually.
Okay.
I saw it before Sherlock Holmes played for me.
I am still freaking confused.
That's a good thing.
I know, that's but, like, yeah. I think you need a little bit of the plot to be
Not in December. It's not coming out until the summer. All right? Yeah. It's all about teasing your audience until the most, you know, the last moment. That's what he did for Dark Knight. And that's what he's doing now. It worked once; it'll work again.
But I think it definitely looks interesting, like seeing buildings folding in on each other. I was like,
yeah, all the energy that's thrown out your face for a minute and a half.
My one problem, though, I have to say, my one problem with the trailer was way too much Ellen Page in the trailer. Like, what's her character?
She those questions will be answered, I think, like you said.
Yeah, hopefully.
But I
was just kind of like. Okay. She's the character that Leonardo DiCaprio is going to have to explain everything to so that the viewers can learn everything. Like, you know what I mean? That's kind of the way I felt. Whatever.
It just makes me excited because it looks like Memento. You know, his, not Memento, but in terms of...
just a throwback, you know, to his old, like, mindfuck style.
But massive budget, so that just gets me excited. Yeah.
I think 2010 is going to be a lot of that year that, like, a lot of these... You know, fun original movies start coming out. Another one that we saw a trailer for it, and I think it looks really a lot of fun. Night and Day, the Tom Cruise movie.
It looks funny.
I think it looks a lot really funny. I look forward to seeing it. And this is another one that I am super excited for. and you know which one I'm gonna name.
Ugh.
Cop Out.
Oh please.
Don't. And that we're done talking about Cop Out.
No, I mean I saw the trailer. I thought it looked funny. I when I saw it in front of Sherlock Holmes, everyone in the theater was laughing. I think.
So the people who went to go see Sherlock Holmes, they laughed at Cop Out.
Yeah.
That's so surprising.
Okay.
I really want it to be good, but I think we're ready for a Red Band trailer and Kevin Smith said it himself that
is it rated R?
It's rated R.
Oh yeah.
It's a huge pay cut to do it rated R.
Yeah. Oh okay, well that makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. But
can
I
talk about one movie that I've just been waiting and dying and dreaming about, Shutter Island, and I'm just waiting for it to come out just so I can finally.
I swear to God, if it's not going to be, but if it's bad, I'm gonna want to kill someone.
Well, can I just say that my two most anticipated movies of next year both star Leonardo DiCaprio. I think Jordan agrees with me, so I think we can confirm that Leo is definitely legit, and he's one of the best actors around. So
definitely, I mean. What happened to the Titanic kid, you know? Where did that kid go?
Oh, hell, he was good in that, whatever.
But, I think, can we talk about Matthew Vaughn's Kick-Ass? This is
yes.
amazing buzz at every screening, and the trailers just make it look like it's one of the fun.
Did we all see the Hit Girl trailer?
Mm-hmm. The yes.
Yeah. Holy shit. I mean, I've never seen a movie take more risks like that, where just a little kid cursing like that and just like doing the things that she's doing in that movie. I think it's utterly insane.
Yeah. When I think the first screening response came out, like way they had one in London or something at press, and they said it's a mix of Superbad and The Matrix, and I was like, how the hell are they gonna pull this off? And then I saw it and I saw that, you know, the Hit Girl snippet trailer, and then I can see, you know, the style, and it looks just so much fun.
Definitely. I mean, what else is coming out next? Edge of Darkness looks like it's a fun little movie that it's gonna be like Taken again.
Yeah, one I'm not too excited for actually is Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
I when I saw Avatar a second time, I got a trailer for that in 3D and it looks bad. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't think it looks bad. It just looks like Tim Burton. Yeah, it just looks like Tim Burton doing what he does, and I don't know, after Sweeney Todd, which I thought was pretty disappointing, I don't know, I know Dan likes him a lot better than
I like Sweeney Todd, but yeah. No, I'm excited for Alice in Wonderland from Tim Burton, but I'm always excited for a Tim Burton movie, and I'm trying to think, what's another one?
Speaking on the same note, of directors doing, you know, what they want to do, Ridley Scott and Robin Hood, that, it just looks kind of like the same.
I haven't seen that trailer, so I can't comment.
Not too excited for that.
Clash of the Titans, anyway?
It looks fun.
It looks really fun, yeah.
And of course, Sam Worthington, I think is just a good actor. But I'm worried because now they're having talks of doing the reshoots and putting it out in 3D, which I think is just a terrible idea.
Yeah. We could see it. They'll be 2D if you want to see it in 2D. So I think they'll find a good balance. But Green Zone, I'm very excited for.
Oh, yes. Yeah, me too.
Very much. I mean, and especially after all this news of how Bourne 4, which again, I'm very happy. Might not get off the ground because Green Gas doesn't want to do it, won't do it, and Damon won't do it without Green Grass.
I think if they find success in this one, which will probably be pretty hard considering the $150 million budget, I think if they find huge success with this, I think 4 is pretty much a lock for their next film.
What do you guys think about just coming up very shortly, as in like a week or two from now, Daybreakers? Which, Jordan, I know you saw it.
I saw it. It's a fun movie, and it does the vampire thing very well. It's very entertaining to watch, but it's not. I mean, a year from now, when we do another 2010 wrap up, it's gonna be forgotten.
The Book of Eli.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it looks great. I'm excited.
Frozen. Anybody?
Yeah.
I actually didn't watch the trailer, but just from the concept, it sounds very cool.
Another one. Again, I'm sick of January, February because it seems to be all coming out. Wolfman.
I feel the same way about that movie I kind of do about Robin Hood. I like the premise more than the trailer, you know?
I agree with that, but now that's rated R, I'm kind of more excited. And Walter Murch came in to edit, so.
I'm just curious. I'm really curious for it. I'm really curious.
Do you guys want to talk about some way down the line?
Before we get to way down the line, it's just two more I want to address.
Sure.
Wall Street 2.
Okay.
Which I think it's got a chance. And another one that I didn't even hear about until after Avatar, the trailers for Avatar were coming out. Piranha 3D.
Oh, hell yes.
I don't know why this is supposed to, like, make me excited. All right, so let's go a little further, then let's talk summer, and then a little bit of the fall.
I was going to talk pretty, like, kind of Oscar movies, possible Cannes premieres, and...
go ahead.
All right, so Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life.
Hell yeah.
Which you've been waiting for a long, long time. And that's fine. We haven't seen anything from it, really, but it's definitely, you know, delayed now until a possible Cannes premiere, and I think it's going to be awesome. But,
I think another one for Oscars, The Social Network.
Yep.
Yes. I wish Hash was here for this one.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, I'm interested because I think Justin Timberlake is one of those people where I never knew that he had good acting chops, you know. And after I saw Alpha Dog, I was sold on him as an actor, and I want to see what he can do with a really like prominent director like Fincher. And you know, Jesse Eisenberg is always just a good bet.
Yeah, there's a couple ones that are coming out next fall that aren't really Oscar ones, but they look fun. Todd Phillips' Due Date with Robert Downey Jr., Jamie Foxx, and Zach Galifianakis, and then Scott Pilgrim versus the World is getting a late August release, I think. So,
is it?
Yeah, and then Tron Legacy comes out late next year.
It's
pretty fun.
I can't wait.
And then Michelle Gondry's The Green Hornet. I'm just really interested to see anything from this. I wonder what his style is going
to
be.
I mean, I can't wait to see it, but I don't know how. I can't picture in my head him and Seth Rogen together. But then again, he did. Him and Jim Carrey work, so you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a one huge summer one that we forgot. Toy Story 3.
That's just the lock for Best Picture already for next year. For instance, the best animated. I think another one, there's a couple good summer ones that are coming out that are gonna be interesting to see. I think Salt, which I want to go read the script for, actually, which is written by Kurt Wimmer, who also wrote Law Abiding Citizen. But unlike Law Abiding Citizen, the director of Salt is actually good. Philip Noyce, I forgot what else he's done, but he's done another good stuff.
Present Danger, Patriot Game.
Right, he's done good stuff. Another one I'm interested to see is The Last Airbender, because I don't like the TV show and I don't like M. Night Shyamalan, but considering some of the talent that's in that movie, i.e., I forget his name, but the dude from Slumdog Millionaire,
Dev Patel.
Yeah, he's in that. So I don't know. Maybe it will work. Maybe it won't. Not sure. The last two I want to address for the summer, anyway, is one, Predators, with Nimrod. Yeah. I'm not sure. I liked the Predators franchise before Alien vs. Predator, so I want to see what just another straight-up Predator movie will be like. And another one, Jonah Hex, which has just been through the ringer of just screenwriters, which were originally Neville Dean Taylor getting fired from it.
Really?
Quit? I think it was a voluntary quit, actually. But they left. They were writing it. They left the project. And, you know, after Transformers 2, I don't have any more faith in Megan Fox.
I actually heard she has a really small part. They're kind of headlining her, but I heard it's just kind of like not a cameo, but like she's in a few scenes. But we'll see.
I hope so. And then, you know, do you guys want to address anything about what we're not looking forward to in 2010? Do you just want to skip that?
And then we're talking about a couple more movies I'm really excited for. After Gone Baby Gone, Ben Affleck is coming back with directing The Town.
Oh, me too. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah,
that comes out. That's coming out.
Is he writing that too? Like Gone Baby Gone?
I don't know, but
he wrote it. Yeah.
Okay, and then William Monahan, his London Boulevard, his directorial debut.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Departed and Kingdom of Heaven. Very excited for that. Then Noah Baumbach's Greenberg with Ben Stiller. You can check out the trailer. I've loved all his movies, so excited for that. Your Highness, David Gordon Green's Pineapple Express follow up. I mean, it's not, it, you know, in the same vein in terms of the action comedy. And I think That's about it. And You Will Meet a Tall Dark Stranger, Woody Allen's next. Whatever Works was kind of disappointing, but
is anyone besides me looking forward to the Expendables?
Oh yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, last one, Jackass 3D. I mean, look, I like the first Jackass movie on a fun, stupid level. The second one, I think, is a piece of crap. I have no faith in the third one, especially 3D.
I think both movies are kind of giving you the same thing. I think Jackass 2 is fine. I had as much fun with it as the first one. So this one, I'm expecting as much fun, but I can't wait to see 3D, you know? No, I'm just kidding. I don't think 3D is going to have too much to do with it.
So. Yeah. Okay. So let's close it out. Dan, before I close it out, quick thing. I suggest everyone listening to this, go over to thefilmstage.com and vote in our 2009 readers poll and give us your opinion of what you think.
Exactly.
2009 will be left. Remember.
Yeah.
Correct us.
Actually, we just had a spammer that voted for Transformers Run to the Fallen like 30 times, so I have to clear those out. But yeah.
Well, you also made Transformers 2 the only one that actually people actually saw in the worst category.
Well, that's not. It's not. What do you? I don't know what you want.
You could have put Law Abiding Citizen in there. You could have put 2012 in there too. So moving on. Let's close this out. Dan, where can people find more of you on the internet?
You can find more of me at thefilmstage.com, where I write and edit a lot. And then you can also follow me at twitter.com/DJMECCA. That's where you can find me.
Jordan?
Yeah, I've been known to do some work on thefilmstage.com. So there, and then twitter.com/thefilmstage.
You can find me at merylbar.com, twitter.com/sonic43, and thefilmstage.com. Join us next week when we will be discussing, Hash and I will be back in full form, and we will be discussing the ongoing debate of film versus video. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Happy New Year.
Goodbye. Happy holidays.